we do it like we do it.
Ahoy!
Well, hola, my dear friend, mi amigo.
Hola, bonjour. No, we're so, you know, when you've traveled the world, you can podcast in any language you like.
Oh my God, it's so true.
Call me Jory.
I was watching on YouTube a thing about this medieval Italian woman named Simonetta Vespucci, and all I could do for like the rest of the day was Simonetta Vespucci, and all I could do, like, that's the only thing I could done. Vespucci, I mean, she was like married to a guy who was related to Americo Vespucci, who the Americas is named after. But I was like, all I could do is like that. But I was like, that's why I love Italian, because it's so musical. The way they talk, and they talk with the hands, and it goes up and down, and Americo Vespucci, and Simonetta Vespucci. Anyway, and there's probably some Italians that are like, oh, make her stop. But I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I like it so much.
I'm a big Food Network fan, and I like to read tweets criticizing the way Giada De Laurentiis over enunciates certain words, because she lapses between like English and then really, really textbook proper Italian pronunciations, and like Italian people are like, it's too much, like like, and then you take the spoon, and then you take the prosciutto. It's like, sorry,
prosciutto.
It's really, yeah, like really, they're like, chill.
They're like, it's okay, you know, because we say, we don't call it a Big Mac, we call it a Big Mac.
Well, like on, we were talking about the Valley last week with Capri. I know it technically, with Jesse Lawley, I guess it technically is Capri, but he was just like going with it over and over to like.
And it made sense, you know, when Michelle kept going, stop calling it a sophisticated dinner. Like, stop calling it. He's like, she's like, stop. Like, that's probably something she'd been hearing for weeks. Like him saying, and she was just like, I am over this. Like, you're not that sophisticated. Yeah. Shut the F up.
Which we'll get into later, because it turned out to be a really sophisticated party.
Super just sophisticated. Yes. I mean, I think we should talk about the pizza that's not in the pie. That makes no sense. But actually, we are talking with this because Andrea Denver is back on Summer House this week. But anyway, but the pizza that's not in the pie is Nate is not with us because he is on a plane to Italia right now, because he's going to go help them write, you know, because, you know, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, actually all the buildings in Pisa, like apparently are just sinking down into the ground. So he's going to go help.
He will be staying with, he finally got in with Saturn. Don't want to ruin the surprise, but her friends Dolce and Gabbana.
Yep.
They're housing him.
They are. They're love nesting, the two of them.
Oh, speaking of love nests and love tanks. Oh, that's a good segue. I'm proud of myself.
Look at you. It's only Orange taken County. Us 4 years, but hey.
I guess we should start with Real Housewives of Orange County.
And my sorority sister, Shannon Storms Bedore, in her lawsuit. Well, not her lawsuit, her ex's lawsuit against her.
Yeah.
Well, it just got Alexis Bellino. There was some stuff that was happening on social media this week between the three of them.
Well, what happened is the feud I saw on Instagram is that Patty Stanger gave a statement saying she's Alexis's friend, old friend, and she's worried that John Jansen is taking advantage of her. And Alexis literally like screenshot put together a collage of all those little headlines from what Patty said, and said, not only is Patty not my friend, like she doesn't know John and she's just trying to like insert herself because Patty's been off Bravo for like a decade.
Yeah.
She'll do like any appearance she can get.
She's so thirsty. She's so thirsty mm-hmm. for it. 100%. And this is one of those things where it's like, two things can be true at the same time. I agree with Alexis. I don't think that they're friends. I think Patty is thirsty for it. I think that she's talking out of her ass just to try to make herself relevant. But I do think that Patty's kind of right, though, about her overall mm-hmm. vibes about John, though. Like, I don't think she's wrong.
Yeah.
And the way that Alexis came after her for, like, which, you know, she's like, she's a single matchmaker, like, and I was like, that's like,
oh, I remember
shot
that.
Through the, and the way she said it was like really, really mean. And I was like, that's, I don't think that's very nice, but I also get where you're coming from. And
that's
not untrue, like, but still.
Those who can do, those who can't teach.
Yeah.
She's a matchmaker who's never been married.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
So I was like, but I do. I mean,
I have a fun. I'm slightly biased against Patty Stanger. I've either one of those stories. I loved the show, by the way. Love Millionaire Matchmaker. And I've become friends with people who were on it and stuff, like Robin Kasner. Mm-hmm. Do you remember her? The pink Hello Kitty girl.
Yep.
My friend from before the show, she went on as a contestant. She was Jerry Lewis's granddaughter. But besides the point, my friend responded to, I've said this 10 times or never, responded to a job, went for an interview at her matchmaking company. This was during when the show was on the air, and she got hired, and then they sprung it on her. We'd like it to be an internship.
Ooh.
They advertised and hired her. No, they advertised and hired her for a paid position.
Uh-huh.
And then we're like, surprise, if you do want to come work with us, it's going to be an internship.
But an unpaid internship.
Unpaid.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, it was totally misleading. Yeah. They mm-hmm. advertised a position. They interviewed for a position. Then we're like, if you like it so much, work for free.
No, absolutely fucking not. That's bullshit. That's absolute bullshit. Yeah. That's just like what perpetuates in a lot of industries, but especially in like the entertainment industry is it's just like the Devil Wears Prada. A million girls would want to have this job. So it's like, you better put up or shut up. Like, because, and that's mm-hmm. bullshit. Like, people need to live. People need to get paid for the work that they do and to be able to live. And it's absolute bullshit. So I'm not
surprised.
The
ones trying to do that to you wouldn't work for free. So they can't expect you.
Exactly. And I'm not surprised because I also know like a couple of other people who've had business dealings with Patty, and she is notoriously A, thirsty, and B, I'm going to use the word thrifty on things that like she shouldn't, like just that she wants things for free. So
this she's allegedly friends. I think she's BFS with Jill Zarin, so I think that tells you where her character lies.
Well, I mean, I'm interested to see all this drama happening before we see the season of Orange County is making me really want to see the season of Orange County, which is good. So they're doing their job.
This will be an interesting season, I think, because in like Kardashian format, we've watched half the story play out while filming.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to tune in to watch the rest. Just like the Kardashians do. You get certain leaks on TMZ. It seems like this season's going to have a lot of activity, mostly centered around Shannon. But
I mean,
it seems like there's going to be a lot of conflict.
Like Kardashians, like Pump Rules. I mean, I think that that's kind of the new thing now, where they used to try to keep everything under wraps with these shows and keep everything quiet. And I think there's certain shows where you do, like The Bachelor and other like contestant type of shows like that. But I think these shows, but just enough that leaks out to get people interested is good. So
yeah,
like the next show we're going to talk about, like Real Housewives of Potomac. They're going into right now because we're doing this on Sunday, so I'm missing the last episode of the reunion. It was very hard to get through this season of Potomac, which is the shame because it had leaked out that there'd been this humongous fight, like literal physical fight at kind of a finale type of party. So you thought that like this season was going to be like crazy, like exciting, and it was just not at all. And been hoping for like a little bit more out of even the reunion. And the most I can just say, like, and I'm sure like people are going to disagree with me, and that's okay. I love the Potomac ladies, but I've just been annoyed with them really the last couple of years, kind of all of them, but more this season, Candace and Wendy, because they keep saying like that they want to move on and they want to like fix things. But then they immediately, anytime somebody tries to like say, well, let's just move on, they're like, okay, well, I will move on when you do this, or not until somebody does this. Or they're like, well, they keep bringing this back up again. And it's like, no, you keep bringing this back up again. Like with Candace's husband, Chris, like the whole thing that was over two seasons ago, and with Giselle and Chris and the whole like talking and her feeling uncomfortable. And it's been blown out of proportion. In my opinion, it's been blown out of proportion. Giselle was trying to say that she just felt uncomfortable. And then it got turned into this whole thing of like, of Candace trying to say that she was accusing him, Chris, of like trying to sexually, you know, harass her or something like that. And Giselle's like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that I felt uncomfortable, that I thought there were other people in the room and there weren't people in the room. And then I'm in the room with a married man all by myself and he's had a few drinks and I feel uncomfortable. And that's all I'm trying to say. And but the thing is that nowhere in this season on camera, at least was broadcast, did Giselle ever bring that up? Every single time it was Candace bringing it up. Every single time Candace brought it up. And like every time that like with Wendy, anytime that like something comes up with NECA or something like trying to move on, then like NECA's like, let's move on. She's like, okay, well, I'll move on when you do this. And then NECA will do that. And then she goes, okay, well, but no, I'll move on when you do this. So Wendy's always moving the goalpost for NECA. And I'm just like, I'm so tired of the two of you. Like just not, you're just making it harder. It's like a wall. Always. And I'm not here for it, but they're apparently going to be gone next season. So I'm kind of okay with that.
I know at the reunion, I guess tonight's part three, Andy did call out Wendy for trying to block NECA from joining the show. She was going to be brought on as Wendy's friend and Wendy, or, you know, brought on through Wendy, you know, you find they create introductions into the cast and try to create a backstory. And Wendy did not want NECA brought on or attached to her. So she was trying to block her from the show.
I mean, because it was interesting because it was Ashley who ended up bringing her in. And you were like, oh, I thought that Wendy would have because they're both Nigerian and they're in that same community there. And there have been people online who have posited that they think that Wendy wanted to be the only Nigerian, basically the only Nigerian on the show and wanted to have that because that's a big part of her identity on the show. And that she didn't like, that she felt threatened by NECA because here is a younger, you know, here's a younger quote unquote, I think in Wendy's head, I'm not saying it, but I think in Wendy's head, here's a younger, better version of me. You know, because this is also the thing too. Nigerian women are highly educated. Nigerians are highly educated. Like that's a huge thing, like in the community, like being highly educated, being at the top, being the best. So it's not like she can come after her for like education and stuff like that. Like, except for, well, Wendy has a PhD and I believe NECA just has a JD, but at the same, just a JD, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, but her husband is a doctor, is a medical doctor. NECA's husband's a medical doctor. So, you know, it just is, it just feels childish. Anytime I'm watching Candace and Wendy, it feels super childish, which is funny because it used to feel childish watching Giselle and Robin. And now it doesn't, like, because it, for me, like, Giselle and Robin have kind of, like, risen above it a little bit. You know, like, they've got their own issues. That none of these housewives are perfect on any of these shows. So they're all flawed, and that's why we love them, and that's why we watch them. But it's just been super, super hard to watch this happen. And, oh, shit, there was something else I was going to say about Wendy. Oh, but I loved Wendy. First two seasons, I loved Wendy. And people were like hating on her. And I was like, no, this woman is great. I think she's amazing. And then it was just like the next, like the her third season, I was like, what the fuck happened to this woman? What happened to her? Mm-hmm. And it was actually what a lot of people were asking. Like when she got like, yeah, it just her third season, I was like, what happened?
Is that, do you think that's when she shifted from like education? She's a law professor, right? And all that's, What does Wendy teach?
She's a. I have to look it up again because now.
Well, in general, what I mean is, do you think that's when her identity shifted from academics to primarily housewife? And that's like, you know, there's a, once housewives kind of take over your family and your income, there's always like a. It's less organic. It's less.
Well, she also was like a political pundit. Like she would be like on MSNBC, on a lot of the different like cable news. Like she would be on there like talking about things. So she's well known and from the camera. So yeah, it was like it did seem to be that like to me it felt like she was like, "Oh, I'm a star now. I'm a star. I'm better than this. I'm better than, like, I've come up and I am now even, like, way better than this." That's how it felt to me. And I just was like, no. Oh, my gosh. Like, what is going on here? So, yeah, it's like she was an assistant professor at Johns Hopkins School of Education. That's
what she was.
So, yeah. But
which is a top.
Yes.
Top tier like, school. John
this Parker. Woman is amazingly smart. Amazingly smart. Like, I wouldn't want to go up against any of those women. Like, I wouldn't want to be read by any of them. Actually, I kind of would like to be read by them, but like not read for filth. Like, read for fun, yes, but not read for filth. But like Wendy and Candace, I would not want to be read by because, ugh. So that's why I'm on a podcast going like, I'm so glad.
They'd make you cry. I would like.
Wendy would make me cry. Candace would make me laugh. Wendy would make me probably cry. I'll be true.
I would like Karen to make fun of me, like you said, not for filth, but I would welcome her insults and I would giggle while she would like.
I mean,
it'd be so fun.
Karen is just, she is the grand dame. She's grown in. She called herself the grand dame and we all were like the first season, like, what the fuck is this woman talking about? But she has become it. She's a woman who's like learned how to embrace the silliness of it all. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's like, she understands. She, again, she's another housewife who knows her job. She knows what she's doing. She knows how to bring people together. She knows how to talk shit. She knows when to not talk shit. She knows how, like, she knows how to be funny. She knows how to be serious. She comes in and she does her job on this show and she does it super well. Like, she knows. So, like, that's why I love Karen, because, like, there are times when I can, like, not agree with Karen, but I still love her. I think she's a top-notch housewife. Always. Always.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but I will probably have more notes after, we'll see, after the third episode, but probably, you know, not. It just, it was a hard season to get through. I'm not going to lie. It was kind of all over the place.
A quick thing I did see, I think it was today or was it yesterday? TMZ, Wendy's on vacation in Jamaica with her whole family and her house was robbed.
No.
And so yeah, her
she's gonna blame NECA probably. Sorry. Like,
what people online were saying was she pulled a the rumors about Dorit and PK, that it was staged to create drama to guarantee a next season, because she said her Birkins were stolen and her jewelry was stolen, which is devastating to a lot of people, but to a housewife, your Birkins and your jewelry are your, that's your, Yeah, it's the core of your, they justify, no, but so I did see people online saying, well, it's a degree, but I was like, I don't know.
For some reason, I don't know. I don't think Wendy would do that, but I don't know.
No.
I didn't think she would go for making candles either, but.
Yeah.
Although I'm all for her husband's cannabis business. I'm like, go for it, dude. Happy Eddie. We're pro cannabis here at PCP, so.
Yeah. I mean, I was about to play innocent and be like, I don't know what you're now. Yeah. We know what I do when I hop off this mic late at night. It's where my best tweets come from. Yep. When you guys wake up at like 7 a.m. and there was a tweet at 12:30, there's about some like obscure, really weird reference to some historic luxury something. I get high, hop in bed, and I browse like First Dibs, Realtor.com, only really expensive areas and really expensive. And it's just, and that's how I fall asleep. It's my lullaby.
Your lullaby, Twitter next to you, your thumb just like poised, I'm like, ooh, ready.
What is this rare color and skin of Hermes I've never heard about? Oh my God. And then I go to a deep dive, fall asleep, and I wake up to something in drafts, and I'm like, yes.
You're like, this is it, the creative. The muse visits you late at night. But it visits me too. Like when I've taken my gummy and it's hit and then I'm starting to fall asleep, I've started keeping a notebook because I used to like do my notes on my phone, but that's too jarring for me. So I have a notebook because I will all of a sudden come out with like jokes and like stuff because it'll all start to hit me then. So I have to write them down and then I'll look at them the next morning. I will say 50% of them, I go, I don't know what I'm saying here. But then the other 50%, I'm like, that's fucking brilliant, Stacey. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's great. Like the genius of THC and the midnight hour.
Yeah, it's around one thing I do have to do at a certain point. Once I'm stoned, I will not let myself tweet anymore because the thought process gets me worked up and I can't sleep. And then I start eating, which I can't let myself do. So at a certain point, I'm like, no more tweets. So they go in drafts or notes.
And that's smart.
Like 2 weeks later, I find them. So.
You're like a girl dealing with her ex-boyfriends. Like you don't get stoned or drunk and text your exes. Like you're like, I don't get stoned and tweet. I just make a draft. Like, I mean, there's friends I've had to take their phones away from them. Like, I'm like, no, you're not allowed to have your phone. Mm-mm. No.
Yeah.
Man. Well, I know somebody who shouldn't have a phone when they're drunk, and that is Kyle Cook of Summer House. Oy. Actually, that's a man who likes to get drunk and eat crap. Like, have you seen this? Have you seen videos of him?
He drinks like, he's very fratty.
He's so fratty. And he's 42 years old.
That's the part that trips me out. He parties like someone literally divide his age by two, 21, like a college student. Mm-hmm. That's still his identity.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think like some of the funniest parts of Kyle Cook are when he is drunk late at night by himself eating and talking to himself. Like that's fucking hilarious. Like I love that. That's some of my favorite parts of Summer House. But like this past episode, he did that and he was up till like 4 o'clock in the morning. And then he finally comes in and wakes his wife up, Amanda, and she's pissed already. And like literally like this entire season so far, he's been upset because Amanda's not responsible. Amanda doesn't do all these things. And then he's like, and then Amanda wants to have kids. I was like, dude, you fucking out to like 4 o'clock in the morning getting drunk and like wasted. Mm-hmm. You're out that like we talked about last week, like you're pushing West into things like because he's about to win a race and like almost break his nose. Like you're so irresponsible, dude. You're so irresponsible and you cannot see it. You cannot see it or you refuse to see it. My opinion is that's a game of projection onto Amanda. Like in my opinion, dude. And I'm just like, Lord.
Oh, you mean like the way he keeps saying she's not ready, like yes. she's irresponsible, she's not ready for kids. Mm-hmm. She's the one who is home like all the time, and he's the one. I know part of it is his business. You do have to be out and about, but not till 4 a.m.
I mean,
you can make an appearance at yeah. these events.
And like she's talked about, I mean, oh my God. Why they got married in the first, I don't know. Like, honestly, I just don't think it's gonna, it's one of those things where she's a homebody. She enjoys staying at home most of the time, and he likes going out. And I think couples can work that way as long as there's an open dialogue and there's a compatibility in that of like how that mm-hmm. works out. Obviously it's not compatible for them and it's not working. And if you have a child, you're going to throw like, that's going to fuck it up even more. They've gotten dogs. So that gives you a little bit more like responsibility to have to deal with there. But I'm like,
also like with him, he's cheated on her before. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, 'cause I do know couples who are totally fine doing separate things. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it's great. I stay home. I need my own space anyways. He can go out. But because he's cheated before, that kind of like trust is she stays at home wondering what he's doing nights.
Booyakasha.
Yeah, I kind of threw that away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's not cheating, but so when half of them were out partying and half of them were staying in, which basically was like the girls and, well, it was Lindsay, Andrea, lovely Andrea back, our Italian stallion there, and Paige, and I think, and Sierra, and I think Amanda, they were all staying at the house and everybody else went out. And they were the girls and Andrea were playing a game. And one of the questions came up was like, how would you rate your sex life? And Lindsay was like 2.5. And everybody was like, what? Oh my gosh. And this became like quite a conversation too in the after show. And it was just like, dude, if you're rating your sex life 2.5, why are you getting married, in all honesty? Like, yeah. That's like, I don't care. It comes from both sides there. Like, then really, like, you need to be, like, in serious couples counseling or, like, put a hold on that marriage because it ain't going to get easier when you get married.
Yeah, yeah. They haven't even, like, hit the honeymoon phase yet. They're not of marriage. They're not married. They don't have kids to blame, like say Jax and Brittany. I mean, it's literally like you're supposed to be in the best point of the happiest point of your relationship, and it's the compatibility is falling apart or isn't there.
Yeah, I'm also like, oh no. So like that's like this whole season again, kind of like, you know, Orange County, kind of like Pump Rules, kind of like Kardashians. We know what's going to happen. We know that they're going to break up. And so we're mm-hmm. watching, it's like building the case for this breakup, whether it's Carl's mm-hmm. case or whether it's Lindsay's case, it's building the case for the breakup in general. I mean, in my opinion, it's just building the case, period, that you guys should not get married. So for anybody else who didn't think, like, I thought they shouldn't be together, period, from the very beginning. But, like, if anybody was, like, having questions about that, like, no, I thought they were great. Watch this case be built like a lawyer. Mm. A lawyer is building this case right now. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Oof. Well, I think like, summer, which is, well, spring break, which is almost over, we should take a break.
Pump Rules this week open with the funniest fourth wall, breaking of the fourth wall I'd ever seen on production side. It is Sandoval's confessional, and he goes right back into how he pays all the bills. Ariana doesn't buy batteries, pens, paper towels, and the producer literally cut him off on camera and said, are you sure you want to go there again? The media, social media destroyed you last season for bringing this up. Like, why are you like?
And the way he said, the way he said, well, I think Ariana's going to have a rude awakening when she moves out. I was like, excuse me, bitch. I don't believe you have ever lived on your own. You lived with Jackson Schwartz when you moved out here, and then you moved in with Kristen, and then you moved in with Ariana. Bitch, whenever when have you lived on your own? I don't know Ariana's, you know, roommate history, but I could believe that that woman has lived on her own longer or more than that man has ever lived on his own. So he needs to shut the fuck up again.
Yeah.
But he's not going to. He's going to continue to get destroyed about that. I'm just like, uh-uh. Yeah, no.
I love that they kept it in with the producer being like, do you really want to go there? You've been
Yeah. I mean, honestly, dude. Like,
sorry, before we have some kind of obligation to prevent you from harming yourself.
Don't ever say production didn't look out for you, Tom. Come on. Like they're trying to you know, get and save you from yourself, but no, you're doing a good job of like fucking all that shit up. Yeah. Oof, man. Well, you know, they're still on the beach and that horrible beach day, which is just terrible. And I, you know, you and I have like differing opinions on Ariana. We won't fight about that too much, but I love your little smile. That
I actually had some nicer things to say this week about her.
I'm looking forward to hearing them.
Yeah.
Well, I did enjoy the way that she kind of, but I felt bad that she had to go off on them. That this was my assessment of it, is that Tom is there. Throwing jabs at her, saying all this stuff about her. And then they're not getting mad and telling him to shut up. They're getting mad at her reaction to what he says to her. Mm. And that she's the problem. Her reaction is the problem. And I'm like, can you guys get your heads out of your asses and realize that he's the problem? Everything that he says, he's provoking her and he's the problem. Please stop this. Mm. Please stop making excuses for this man. And that's what she was trying to say. And that's why she was getting like so upset. And then the way that like Sheena and Lala were talking to her and seeming to try to understand, but then we're going to jump around a little bit. But then later on in the episode, when Sheena and Lala are at the cryobank, you know, looking for sperm, for Lala, and they have a conversation. I thought it was very interesting. Well, okay. Sorry. I'm going to back up a little bit because I'm going to go to what's that golf place? Sorry, I don't golf. the golf place that they went to.
The driving range?
Yeah, the like
Oh yeah, they were at the that was a mental fun fact for me, not too important. I know the driving range they were at. Mm-hmm. It's on Pico. Mm-hmm. It's a public course across from Fox Studios next to Hillcrest Country Club.
But it's
not that you guys need to know, but Hillcrest is like where Candy Spelling belongs. It's the fans. Yeah.
But it's a,
it's next door. It's a
Top Golf. Top Golf. That's what it is. It's a chain of places. It's a chain of places. So yeah. So when she was there and she was talking to Katie and James and Allie, by the way, I love sober James. I find him way more entertaining and way more interesting sober than drunk. So I hope he stays sober because I do think he's a better castmate and just a more interesting human being. But besides the point, Ariana was talking about how like she's looking forward to buying her own house, that it'll just be hers and that it's mine and no one can take it. And all of a sudden a bell went off in my head and I go, oh, just like Lala with her second child from a sperm donor, because then it'll be hers and no one can take it from her. So I really don't understand why Lala continues this conversation with Sheena at the cryobank about not understanding why Ariana doesn't want to move out of the house that she owns with Tom and is not going to fight for the house or fight to stay into the house or fight for like what is right for her house, when Lala is fighting for what is right with her daughter in a custody situation. But that is, it's similar. It's not exactly the same. It's not apples to oranges. It's not apples to apples, but it's apples to oranges. It's still fruit. And it's like, there's still, it's very similar. So it's okay for you to fight tooth and nail for your child. And then want something that's your own. But it's not okay for Ariana to fight tooth and nail for something that she worked very hard for, that she put a lot of herself into, you know, to make and was her dream house. And then to be upset that it all came apart.
Yeah, I think the way Lala, why she's so dismissive at times of Ariana's struggle, is she's jealous, obviously, of the sympathy she gets. Mm-hmm. But also she doesn't view Ariana's situation as seriously. She's like, oh, it was a boyfriend and you just have to move out. I had a child. Mm-hmm. My problems are more legitimate than yours. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I watch Lala's face when Ariana speaks, and she's thinking and she's asking key questions and she'll nod along in agreement, but you could see her wheels turning.
Yep.
So I do. Yeah. I don't think she takes it as seriously because.
She doesn't. She doesn't, I mean, take it.
Lala wasn't married to Randall. No. I get there's a kid involved, but it's not like Lala's relationship was Lala's relationship was sketchier than Tom's and Ariana's before it blew up.
Yep.
Right? Like, she takes the kid thing very seriously, which she should. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want anybody to think that I'm like, not saying that Lala shouldn't fight for her child. No, let's say that at all. I'm like, please fight for your child. But I'm also saying is that it is a very similar thing. Like, you've put life into this child, and that's your child. Some people don't fight for their children, though, too. Like, some people, so, but this is like, this what, is
like Brock's first set.
I'm not going to say anything.
Brock's non-summer moon children.
his spring winter and fall children. Autumn. I think one of his children's name is Autumn. I think that's the whole thing. Like,
yeah.
His ex was really pissed about the summer name because one of his daughters is named Autumn. Oh my gosh. Oof, oof, oof. But anyway. Go ahead.
I was going to say, a favor Ariana did for herself today, or in this episode, was towards the beginning when they're talking to her about the breakdown she had on the beach. And for viewers like me, who've never been that warm to her, because I've never felt she was a warm presence on the show, is she explained to them, I think she said, like, she didn't say cold. She said, I keep this armor, because they were saying you need to release. You need to like cry, get over it, release. She's like, I keep this armor up to like, so you guys don't get pulled into it or something. And that was one of the first times she had acknowledged that wall, that barrier that she keeps up. Which for me, I was like, oh, so she gets it and she's trying to do something positive. It's like, let's be honest, she's always been a cold character on the show. She was always kind of like a little distant, a little removed, a little. So when she goes into it this way, as I've complained all season, like calling the shots, you can't be friends with him, don't do this, without much explanation, I was just like, God, she's so annoying, to be honest. But with this, I was like, oh, so she's aware of it and trying. You get what I mean?
Like,
because I always wondered, like, does she think she's fun? Does she think she seems like someone fun to be around? Because I don't think she's always been kind of a buzzkill on this show. And now she explained what she's doing. And I was like, okay. She was, you know what it was? She was being more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was being more vulnerable instead of talking to the kids like school children. And that's when I was like, okay. She was vulnerable and just trying to hold herself together. And it was one of the few times she's acknowledged that. And I was like, I get her now.
I do think it's hard for her to be vulnerable with a lot of them, let alone on the television show. And I think there's been times when she has been vulnerable and it's been thrown back in her face. Point that I will never forget, because I always thought that she should have dumped Sandoval right then and there, but her 30th birthday, and she planned this party, and it was not long after her father had died, and then Sandoval left to go smash cars in Vegas for Peter's birthday. But she got vulnerable with him. She started crying. She was like, I want you here. Like, this is like really important to me. And he just kind of swept that away. And so I think like it's things like that for people like that and for women like that, you know, she's not one that you tell her to smile, she ain't gonna smile. Like she's like, fuck that shit. No, which I am all for. Do not like, no, you don't have to smile for anybody. And I don't think that
smile for him. I want to see that pretty little smile, lady.
Right. Yeah.
Sweetie.
She's never been that type of person. You know? Yeah. She's never been that type of person. She's never going to be. I support that 100%. And I think it's just, you know, some people hold it back. Some people vomit their emotions onto everybody. Kind of Lala did that. Like, you know, Lala, like when her father died and she was going through stuff, she vomited that all over. She took it out on everybody else. So it's like, so with Ariana, you see bits and pieces of like little spurts like going out, and people get upset when she does that. All the, it's like it's never nothing is. It seems like for a certain set of the cast members, nothing she can do is right. Either she's holding back too much, or she's raging and she's giving too much. Like it seems like the only people who seem to like care and seem to kind of get it, to be honest with you, are Katie, Allie, and James. Like they seem to be the only ones who are kind of like, girl, you do you. Like this is all on, like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Like we get it. Like those are the only three to me that seem to get it. That seem to get it at all. And give her that, at least on camera. But
well, they're also more firmly on her side. So I think for the one like Schwartz, obviously, he's conflicted and he can't take confrontation. And then you have Sheena, who is just playing both sides, can't be all, you know.
Yeah.
A little sneaky. So the ones who are on her side, I think they see her more and understand her more. I learned a lot just from that one little scene. I was like, oh, she isn't the ice cold B word. She's always been since, because it's not like she suddenly changed. She kind of was very consistent in from old Ariana to now. She's always, I've never really, you know, I love my chaotic meltdown.
You do.
Toxic princess, Kristen Doty, and those types. I never found, but once she acknowledges, like, okay, so there's more to her. She's not just this cold, flat character. And this is hard on her. It's not just about endorsement deals.
Well, okay. Speaking of Tom, who can't, Tom Schwartz, who is. I just want to talk about fucking Joe. Two things about Joe. The Lala and Joe meetup at Tale of the Pup was awkward as fuck because, as you say, you believe that Lala is doing the producer's job. she's like the go-between.
Yeah. This was another example. There's almost one in every episode where they send Lala on these one-on-one missions. You could see on her face, she's like, why the hell am I at some hot dog stand with Joe? Why am I getting smoothies with Schwartz? I would say she's the producer's favorite at the moment. She's their plant. She's their representative. She's their Tamara Barney. Tamara Judge.
Oh, damn. That's a deep cut.
They send her out to do these one-on-ones where she collects information and makes you think she's your friend. And then, boom, she can take that and move the plot. Because she does that. She'll be like, this is boring. On to the next segment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's very well aware of what the producers want and when a story's getting slow.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, they meet up. And it was whatever. And she seemed to be kind of placating Joe, but I didn't feel like she was completely on Joe's side. You know what I mean? Like she wasn't like giving in. And then when they had girls' night at Foxfire Room, which, oh my God, I was dying. Just on the Reservoir Dogs walk-up shots of the women, I was like, they're going to the Foxfire Room. They're going to Foxfire. And I know it's right around the corner. It's right by where I used to live. And I was like, oh my, and that's the area that they live in. in Valley Village, I was just like, oh my gosh. And that's the kind of dive bar I love. I love that kind of dive bar. It's like the sugar sweet. It's like the Woodman, like, it, love it.
It has the burgundy leather boots, mm-hmm, that like hasn't changed since the 70s.
Yeah, you still smell the cigarette smoke, you know, and everything's, mm-hmm, still like in there. But I did find it really interesting. I did not think that Katie was going to get as mad at Lala as she did. I felt that Lala was a bit dismissive of Katie's feelings, but I really was surprised at how angry Katie got at Lala. I was like, oh, yeah, girl, I thought, whoa. But I guess it's because it seems to be, as much as like, I feel sorry for Joe this episode, she has been spinning lies, though. Like, because she kept saying, like, as she said to Lala, she was like, oh, I didn't know about Rachel and Tom. I was focused on Schwartz. And it was like, girl, that's bullshit. And when she said, I thought that they were broken up, meaning Sandoval and Ariana, it was like, no, you spent Thanksgiving at their house together. Like,
yeah.
So no, you did not. This is a bunch of bullshit. It would be one thing if she was like, I was confused because Sandoval was telling me that they were broken up, yet I'm spending Thanksgiving with them. But no, she took the full on chest out that she thought that Sandoval and Ariana broke up. And I was like, girl, yeah, stop lying. You're not helping yourself here. No.
With Katie's anger there, though, one thing I thought about was her history on the show. Because, you know, she's not the alpha. She's not the group leader, but she's always the group leader as like enforcer and like defends him. And she spent a lot of time through the years deciding or enforcing who's in the group, who's out. You can't hang with this person. Why are you, you know, like, and the fact that she was so upset with Lala having what was obviously, as a veteran of the show, she knows, a setup production lunch. Mm-hmm. She was pissed at the chance that Joe could stick around. Joe's still getting camera time. She's having one-on-ones and she's trying to keep her out of the circle, mm-hmm, and like get her off the show. Rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But I was like, she has to know what's going on. And she was like, why would you have lunch? Like, Lala, what if Lala blurted out, because the Alex Baskin made me, his producers made me.
I mean, that would really been breaking the fourth, yeah, wall, and I would love that.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, her reasons are kind of unfounded, I think, unless something crazy happens, because, and this was painful, most of the episode, though, with Joe, and Schwartz's interactions was just him, just, and finally at the end breaking it off with her. But like, that was just, and that's what a lot of us were thinking and saying on the socials, was just that he wasn't being completely honest with her, that he was like using her, like, you know, mm-hmm, she was a soft vagina to land in, and I mean, she was. And look, she moved in. I mean, I think that's what made Katie the most angry, is that she moved in with Tom quickly after,
yeah,
their breakup. So, and she was a part of the friend group, and it was right after they broke up. You know what I mean? And then she acted like she was friends with Katie and Kristen and all of them. And then she went back. So whatever.
Was Joe friends with them when they were married?
I think she was friendly with them because she was kind of on the periphery of this friend group.
So she might, Katie might have a feeling, which could actually, she might be right, that Joe is always waiting in the wings.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like
she, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I can, yeah.
So I can see like that anger definitely like coming up. And that's where that anger wouldn't completely surprise me. But I do... This is what I noticed with Joe, because a lot of people were like, and we even talked about like the way she acted. And I finally was just like, you know what it was, especially when she was doing his hair, that horrible hairdo, which hopefully I just think was revenge. But, and then when she went to like the singles night with him and the other guys, was that she was playing the cool girl. She was trying to be the cool, mm-hmm, girl who gets the guy. And and I say this from a place of a recovered cool girl, of like always trying to play cool and trying to be like kind of one of the guys, and like in order to get the guy. Don't be the cool girl. Don't waste your fucking time, because you just get your heart broken. You just get these indecisive guys, these guys who date and sleep, who will sleep with you, who will tell you whatever. And you become friends, and you are friends with them. They do think of you as a friend. You know, it's not that they dislike you, but you are not, you will never be what they're not going to turn around one day and go, oh my God, it was you always. Like, that's not it. That doesn't happen.
It's not a rom-com.
And she was trying to play cool. She was trying to be cute. I mean, when the guy starts calling you either by a male name or your last name, that is what we call, like, the, you know, a friend zone with benefits. You know, there's friends with benefits and there's friend zone with benefits. And you've been friend zoned with benefits.
The last name thing definitely is like, but the fact that he called her Joseph, I think that was his way of hinting to her, like, I don't see you as that kind of girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't tell her outright. But if what she said in the confessional was true, that they said, I love you to each other, that's fucking confusing. That's really, you don't, I'm sorry, you don't do that. You don't do that. Like, at least I can say that any of the guys that I was like the cool girl with, who we slept together, they didn't tell me that they loved me. They didn't lie to me in that way. So that makes it a little easier to extract yourself. But if they tell you that they love you, absolutely. That's Tom Schwartz can go to hell for that. He can.
Yeah. I feel bad for her, because it was just like, even though it's kind of her own doing, it was just awkward. You could tell, like, she's not a veteran of these shows like this. Mm-mm. And I mean, she left saying, I want to call my dad.
I know. I felt so bad for her right there.
She was not like what Lala said. She's like, I don't think she's like that. Va va voom. I'm going to steal your man. I think she wasn't cut out for this, for this show. Mm-mm. So I guess Katie got her way. Oh, wait. One thing. Can we talk about Tori?
Oh, yeah.
Since we're talking.
Yeah.
I think the show's still looking for a second plot, a second storyline, and this seems so made up to me, thing.
It does. It feels so made up. I was like, stop trying to make fetch a thing. Stop trying to make Sheena a matchmaker and like hooking people up. Please stop it. Stop it.
Yeah. And Sheena said she's been close to Tori for about 10 years. Another one of, she didn't say best friend this time, but she said very close friend. Mm-hmm. The girl is 25, 24 when this filmed. What was Sheena at like 32? I don't know how old. How old is Sheena now?
Sheena's not 40 yet. So Sheena's, I think, in her mid late 30s.
So let's say
was Sheena babysitting her or something like that? Was that?
That's what I'm trying to understand. Like, either they completely made it up, the situation, and this girl was like straight up cast for this weird role, or what was Sheena doing hanging out with ninth grade, like high school freshmen when she was like 28?
I don't know.
That one felt a little forced.
It does feel forced.
Look, you could tell Schwartz didn't care.
No.
He was like.
Schwartz barely cared that Katie slept with Max Boyens. Like, let's get real here. He seems relatively unbothered by it. I mean, he seems the most bothered by it than like. More people, James seems more bothered that she slept with Max Boyens than Tom Schwartz seems bothered. Like, I think that just also gives you an indication of, again, why Katie dumped Schwartz finally. Like, was like, this isn't working. You don't care enough about me. Like, we don't, as women, like, we don't want somebody to be a jealous, raging, megalomaniac, alpha male type of guy. But we do want a guy to be a little like, just be like, really? Really? Like, you want a guy to have a little bit of jealousy. You want to know that he cared, you know? So you want to know that he cared. Like, I would want to know that my ex would, like, care that I, would, like, slept with his friend. Like,
yeah.
I would want to know that.
Yeah. It's a, I don't know what could get him bothered, but that Tori was, like, yeah.
I also have one quick question before we move on. And it's more to the audience slash the public and maybe to your opinion, but, like, so Sandoval's new assistant, Craig, looks like a friend of his, also looks like somebody who came out of central casting. And Craig is like going out with Sandoval. So he's going to the singles mixer. He's going to like whatever. And I was like, did you take Anne out to singles mixers with you? Did you take Anne out to these things? Is Craig picking up your dirty underwear? Is Craig cleaning up after your parties? Or was that just Anne because she was a female assistant?
Yeah.
Look, it takes a lot more than wearing white nail polish and like women's jewelry to like make you a feminist. So.
Did you catch that part, by the way, at the mixer where one of the women hitting on Sandoval is like, oh, like I like it when guys wear women's jewelry. Mm-hmm. And he goes like, I wear a lot of women's stuff. Yeah, I was laughing.
I mean, I think that was a total setup. I think most of the people who talked to them, I think the woman who kissed Schwartz was a setup. I would not be surprised if a producer was like, would you be willing to interact and like kiss him if possible?
Yeah, yeah. That was, they've been using the Mondrian lately, the Skybar in recent seasons. And it used to be thieves. Like an A-list supermodel, like you in its heyday. Mm-hmm. And now it's reduced to like, now it's reduced to like mixers.
Yeah.
Mixers. Oh, that's also the same place where Schwartz held a memorial for his dead lizard.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oy.
Yeah. So.
Oh my gosh.
One last thing about Valley before, I'm sorry, Pump Rules before we move on. James read my mind all season. I've been staring at Schwartz's hair and the dye job, the dye job. And he's like, it just keeps getting like worse and worse. It's true. It's too vibrant. I notice that stuff.
Out of jealousy.
That I have hair to compare it to. Yeah. But I'm staring at it like, and so I start looking at it like, oh, he's lucky. He still has a full head of hair. But I'm like, that's not a natural color.
No.
It's like, it looks like an at-home. There are, in LA, there are local weathermen on like certain news channels who like 1 week, it's like mahogany. The next week, I'm like, you're doing it. Yeah. And the other thing is like, if Joe's your like live-in hairdresser, that's it. I appreciated James calling. I felt validated.
Well, again, James is bad hair. James is like the Greek chorus. You know, this season. And again, why I like sober James so much more, because he is just, he can see everything clearly. He can like talk about it. He's really, he's always been very funny, but this time he's funny in not such a mean way. Like he can be funny in a sarcastic and biting way for sure. But like he used to get, when he would be drunk, he'd be sarcastic, he'd be funny, but in a really mean way. And you're just like, oh, so I love this James. And I hope this James kind of stays and grows in this way. I hope he never starts drinking again. So,
well, I guess there's only one place to head after Pump Rules, and that's one block over. There's nowhere to head. They're filmed in the same exact neighborhood. The Valley.
The Valley. Capri.
The party, the dinner continued.
In all honesty, I don't remember much about the rest of that episode. I didn't take notes on it.
This episode wasn't groundbreaking. It was wrapping up the last episode.
Yeah.
So you had that dinner.
You had the speech therapist coming over to work with Cruz Jackson, and that was kind of sad. I had been wondering because Cruz had been very quiet, and I'm like, usually kids at that age are just nonstop loud and it's noise in your house. And I was like, why is this house so quiet? And I was like, oh, There's another part of me that also thinks, as a non, you know, child, as a child-free person, I was like, maybe he's so quiet because his father's yelling all the time.
Yeah. That was one of my thoughts, was it could be a response to anxiety, or like, I don't know all the right terms for this, but stress in a tense home.
Yeah.
And so like we know Jax has rage, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's, I'm not implying abuse of the child, just no, so you guys no. know, I'm not implying that. I just mean maybe his way of coping in a very tense home. Mm-hmm. Which we now know they're separated and she's taken him out and everything. So there were issues we know about. Maybe that's his, he's very quiet.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wish him the best. I don't want to make fun of little kid here. No. But that my first thought was that, like, the anxiety of, like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that honestly, I don't, none of us are doctors. None of us have kids. I don't know.
I was going to say, we're not parents. No. We're not doctors.
But we were children. So.
Yeah.
We were children at a point. But yeah.
Yeah.
What else happened? Oh, you know what would happen? Okay. I did think it was very sweet that Brittany and was it Jason came over to help like set up Kristen and Luke's apartment for like this, like, you know, sweet, you know, romantic thing, even though it was cringy to me because I find Luke gross. But I did think it was really sweet of Jason and Brittany, because I think Brittany's like a sweet person. I think she's somebody who's probably a good friend. And Jason I really like too. Like, people are like, he's boring. And I was like, that's great. That's a great husband to have. Like, I'm sorry. Jason looks like a great husband. I give all my props to Jason. I want to find me a Jason like that. Like, like, yeah. So it's like, be boring. That's, be boring and nice and like do things for your friends, you know, out of no expectation for reciprocation. You know what I mean? Like, that was really nice of them to do that.
Oh, one thing, my big takeaway from this episode, I was thinking about, it's when Kristen and Luke go to dinner again, they're drinking and talking about their plans for the kids. She can't see herself leaving California. He absolutely wants nothing to do with LA and these people. But it's funny to me because she's preparing for a baby. And I noticed she ordered multiple drinks. So it's not like I was keeping track of how many glasses she ordered, because the drinks kept changing, which told me she drank a lot that night. Mm-hmm. But the point is, I realized what she is to me. Sitcom style, she is that she's crazy Aunt Kristen. Mm-hmm. She's, you know, she's full of drama. Every party, as we saw tonight, even at the gala, her friend's charitable gala for transplants, it turns into a fight and yelling and stop blaming me for what I did.
Yep.
And I was like, you know who Kristen is? Because she mentioned, I was thinking about, like she said, talking about parenthood and her sister and her mom. I'm like, oh, that's right. She has family back in like Michigan. She has nieces or nephews. And like, she's crazy Aunt Kristen, where it's like Thanksgiving. Oh boy. Aunt Kristen had a few too many, and she's bringing up her 7th birthday party where she got like, her therapist says she still feels blamed for ruining Christmas in some 4th grade. And like, or like, mom, why is Aunt Kristen on the couch? She came over late last night. She's having boy troubles again. Oh, go get Aunt Kristen her mommy juice. You know what I mean? Like, she's just chaos. She hasn't changed, even though she commented on our post that she's a butterfly. She's turning into a butterfly, sprouting new wings or whatever. Yeah, no. And I'm not faulting her for it, because I like how stunted and toxic she is. But
I mean, well, I just watching that. Too. Sorry, you made it funny and I'm going to make it dark. But like, you're watching that, and then also with the realization that we all had, that finding out that Luke is 32, so he's 8 years younger than her. I was like, she loves, girl, Is she in therapy? Because she is like, she is a master. This is textbook. If you want to like watch somebody choose emotionally or completely just unavailable men, 100% mm-hmm. unavailable men, time after time, that is what she does. This guy is 8 years younger than her and lives in another state. Has a full life, mm-hmm. like for whatever I feel about him. He has a full life. He has a job. He has family. He has an entire life there in Denver. I can understand him not wanting to give it up. You know what I mean? Like, I absolutely mm-hmm. understand that. He has a full life there. And then, but Jane, when she dated James, like James was like barely 21 years old. He was like a full 10 years younger than her at that point. Like, and what was he? Like, he was an alcoholic. He had all these issues. Tom had his issues. Carter had hit all of his stuff. Like, she literally, like, you watch through like every single one. It's not like she's pushed really good men away. Like, she picks, she's got a, as Patty Stanger would put it, she's got a bad picker. Like, let's bring it all full circle. She's got a bad picker. And like, that's why relationship hopping is so dangerous at times for everybody. But especially, this is why I really go, at least for Lala, I congratulate her for saying, if she wants another child, she's like, I'm going to have one on my own and I'm going to use a sperm donor. And I really just wish Kristen would do that, would say, I really want a child, so I'm going to use a sperm donor instead of trying to make a round peg fit into a square hole, because she's not finding the right guy. I almost feel like if she became a mother first from a sperm donor, she actually might find the right guy afterwards. I think like that would be the interesting plot twist on her life, I think.
Yeah, because she moves in. You're right. She finds these guys younger, unavailable. They're not always the top quality. They move in right away. They move in together.
She doesn't know who they are.
She should.
And they don't know who she is either. Like, and then they're finding out, and then she's getting upset because her expectations are dashed. Like, I sound like an old person.
I don't see, if we get a season two, I don't see Luke being around.
I would really hope we don't, because I can't. He something about him just really, I don't like it. I get the heebie-jeebies from him. I don't think he's good, but he seems to still be in her life. So they seem to be together. So,
Well, you know how we can stay in your lives, you guys? Oh my God. It's so easy. It's basically magic.
Oh my God. It's the easiest.
All you guys have to do is subscribe to Pretty Corrupt Podcast, and we'll move right into your waiting box on your podcast app, wherever you stream. That is right. Just hit subscribe in our episodes, which are Bravo Breakdown on Tuesday, Pop Culture on Thursday, and also some surprise bonus episodes and PCP exclusives sprinkled in too will pop right into your phone. And since while you're on your phone, you could also rate, review, and follow Pretty Corrupt Podcast. We're on Instagram and TikTok at Pretty Corrupt Podcast and Twitter at Pretty Corrupt One. Of course, from there you can find all of our personal accounts, Stacey's, Nate's, and mine, and follow our own chaotic, childless journeys.
Judgy journeys, I would say.
Yeah. On that note, I was gonna say who wants to say bye, but
you do.
Nate's in Italy, so.
Well, so we should say
ciao.
Ciao. Ciao, bella.
Arrivederci. Like we do it.